welcome, and thank you very much for coming to the, this is the Social Cluster Beaches Media Briefing. This is part and parcel of the series of briefings that we have promised at the beginning of the year. Today we're going to be dealing with the social cluster.
And go through that whole long process that's together that the NCOP used to go through. Is that the intention?
In Cape Town, she is visiting them in a few minutes. And for those information that you may require that the departments are not represented here, we provided the contact numbers if you want to explore those stories further, and those people will be able to respond to any of the queries that you might have. Let me firstly introduce the DGs and the representatives of the departments that are here. We've got the Director General of the Department of Health, Lieutenant Selek, who's also the cluster chair. We have the Department of a representative from the Department of Water Affairs, which is the Susan Kize, who sits on the right of the Director General of Health. And from my left, we've got the Director General of the Department of Education, Mr. Duncan Hindu, together with the Department of Public Works, DG, as well, Mr. Manya Moroka, and also the representative of the Department of Social Development. It's Zane Dango, who's representing the Department of Social Development. Given that the statements that we've given you are quite a number of them, we're not going to read the statements. We'll give you the statements to go through. I will give you a few minutes to the Director General of Health just to give an overview. And then we'll then expect you to ask questions based on the statements that we have provided and issues that you want us to inform. Shall I also announce the arrival of the Director General of the Department of Land Affairs, which is called Biguane, and the DG of Mr. Nduli. Yes, who just joined us. So we are ready to start. I'll hand over to the DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, members of the media, ladies and gentlemen. Just to give an overview, you will recall that this cluster, the social cluster, is primarily concerned with issues of poverty reduction and poverty eradication, and it focuses on these through a whole range of programs. There's a program of the delivery of basic services, and there's the anti-poverty campaign and the strategy thereof, and there's a program of enhancing education, both through expansion and quality, and there's a program focusing on health, and then there is a program focusing on housing and infrastructure. Together with a social program started, for example, the program led by the Arts and Culture Department, which is actually focusing on social cohesion and nation building. Those are some of the programs that we are involved in terms of the POA, and the various DGs will actually engage with yourself on any aspect of those programs relating to their competence, together with other issues that you would want to raise. We must also by way of alerting yourself to the fact that we are continuing with the various launches around the anti-poverty campaign. So recall that we did that, the national launch was actually held in the Free State in Jakobstad a few months ago. And we are now having various provinces rolling out their launches between this month and next month. Starting with the Eastern Cape, we are still to finalize the date. In the Eastern Cape, we think it will be around the 23rd or so, but if not, you'll be went to other Limpopo, Gauteng, and so on. And that campaign is going very well so far, with the province very much prepared in terms of that. We're also starting to engage both yourselves and the various stakeholders on the strategy, our anti-poverty strategy. We're consulting on it on Friday, this week, the 19th of September, at NECLEC at 2 o'clock. We will be actually engaging in that launch of the strategy, which is the consultative phase, because now Cabinet has approved the document for consultation with various stakeholders. And we will therefore unveil what it actually contains in relation to the strategy on poverty. Otherwise, all the other issues will be addressed by the DGs that are here, and I'm sure you've had a little bit of a chance to look at the statements and the issues, and you must be ready for questions and interaction. So can I hand over back to you, and we'll engage accordingly.
Thank you very much, DG. Let me also announce that we have also the statement that comes from the Department of Provincial and Local Government, which is represented today by the PDG Medivetta of Urban Renewal and Rural Development, and that is also ready to take your questions. I'm sure after today, the media will not be complaining about access, as we've provided us open access as much as possible with the number of people that we have today. And we start with the questions on the documents that we have received. And any other issue perhaps which is also indicate any other issue that has been in the environment that you still need to be responded to, that you want to pose to the panel. Kirtan Zatama. Michael?
Yes,
okay, let's start with, where are we starting with Tamar?
Well, thank you. I didn't actually put up my hand, but I will ask a question. Tamar Khan from Business Day. It's a question to Tani. Could you just bring us up to speed on your efforts to set up a meeting with experts to discuss the concerns raised by David Bourne and Rob Dyington about the latest HIV antenatal survey? Have you managed
to
get some commitments from the experts to sit down around the table and discuss what's going on? The expert meeting is on track. We have commitment from the experts. We're just finalizing the date for that meeting. So the meeting, including Dorrington himself, we have a commitment from the various experts. We're finalizing the date with the WHO experts because we also wanted them to be there so that they actually engage with us as people who are not necessarily seen to be in the context of the South African debate, but are much more in the context of the international debate around this issue.
So, in principle, you have a commitment, but you don't have a date when everyone's available?
We don't have a date yet, yeah.
Okay. Michael?
Yeah, I have a question for the Department of Public Works. It's about the expropriation bill, and I wondered whether the department is now going to withdraw the bill and rewrite it, or what is going to happen to it?
When we were largely informed about a week ago that it's likely not to go ahead. Actually, the chairperson of the portfolio committee raised an issue that it was not consulted as broadly as in that point. But my minister, together with the chair of the portfolio committee, are currently engaging each other whether or not it's finally taken off or there is an opportunity to bring it back on the parliamentary process.
Okay. Any other follow-up on that issue?
Follow-up?
Yes. Keep going.
A follow-up on that one?
Yes, Harold, follow-up.
As I understand it, there was already indication that the expropriation law will be brought back next year from the committee.
What's your question?
I'm saying I understand that the expropriation bill will be brought back next year. There was already indications about that. Is that true?
I did indicate that we were informed that it has been taken off the parliamentary agenda this year. However, my minister, together with the chair of the committee, are engaged in China because it has not, we've not been informed here like it, that it has been taken off. But we were just informed through parliamentary process. It's not completely off, that's what I mean. There's room for it to be reintroduced and taken through the process.
Okay. Any other question, Kirtan?
Yes, Dion.
Dion.
Thank you, Dion De Lange from Independent Newspapers. I'll set up a question for the Director General of Public Works. Concerning the expanded public works program, I noticed in your notes here that you talk about the 1 million jobs that have been created ahead of the target date, and that has been confirmed by the midterm report that you yourself commissioned from the Human Science Research Council, which was released this week. But that report also criticizes the program quite strongly for having failed, first of all, to achieve its training targets. Only 19% of the training targets were achieved over the midterm period, and only 60% of the budget has been spent. One, is it time to take training out of the expanded public works program and put that with the skill development program? And what is going to be done to improve the budget spending of this program?
It's not time to take it out. I must just answer it like that. Remembering that the expanded public works program focuses largely on unskilled and unemployed people out there. And for us to begin to create a pool of skilled individuals in the built and property environment, we need it to go ahead. It's at 19 because of certain administrative hurdles, which were correctly identified, and relevant institutions were engaged. And it is not likely to reoccur in the financial year.
Yes, please, I'd like to follow that. I'm sorry, certain administrative problems. Can you say exactly what it is that caused this this 19% of the target being reached, please?
Around the 30th of March 2007, specific targets were set for respective provinces and our 11 regions to achieve. It later came out that some of the units that were supposed to achieve certain targets did not correctly put aside the necessary budget. And that aspect was corrected later in the year, hence the 19%. But our planning for this financial year has drastically changed, and we now have what we call quarterly reviews to actually look at whether or not we are on track in terms of that. Now, we also did a comparative analysis of where we were last year at this time, and it has shown that there's a drastic improvement of just over 10% for the same period of this year.
Okay, shall we come back to the time? Dion, did you want to follow up on the same issue again?
If you wouldn't mind, if I can have one more question, I won't ask any more after that. One of the criticisms in this human science research midterm survey is the fact that training cannot take place when jobs are lasting for 4, 5, 6 weeks at a time. And the recommendation in this report is that instead of working with the statistics that the program currently works with of measuring, I think they call it work years or man work years or something to that effect, that hides the fact that many of these jobs are very short term and that no effective training can possibly take place in a job that's lasting 6 weeks. Your response to that?
Let's just share with you the details around the program. The training goes on for 6 months. Then the remaining 6 months of the 12-month period is the exposure of the individual to the practical side of doing things. There have been instances where there were recorded dropouts going to various reasons, i.e. socially related problems, such as on the, especially size of our trainees falling pregnant, and some of them just dropping out, even though policies come and policies allow them to continue. Then there's the good side of things as well. If we expose the young individuals to a 6 month training, we did not expect some of them to be poached by the private sector as early as in 4 or 5 weeks. It's a positive sign, yes. But it also has a negative impact on some of those who were left behind, because some of them then felt, why am I not attracted by the private sector the same way as my 2 or 3 other colleagues did? And that's the whole issue around people dropping out around. Now, what people still don't understand is that we only target the unskilled and unemployed, people who basically have nothing. But when a measurement tool is used in terms of gauging whether or not they're successful, they use conventional methods of training programs where skilled people are targeted. And I think that's the downside of this whole program.
Okay, so we come back to the turn. Victoria is still really important. Go back to Kirtan. Is there still any other questions from Kirtan?
Yes, from Kirtan, yeah.
There's one for the DD of agriculture. Jolene Lambovieta, DD agriculture. Which shortages of skills within agriculture which will be needed in 5 to 10 years' time to make the sector, or to keep the sector competitive?
Thank you for that question. I think if I just preempt the question or the answer by saying that agriculture is really becoming a highly scientific world that is influenced by international global markets as well. So the field that we'll be looking into in the next 5 to 10 years, a science based, where we can begin to benefit from the benefits of technology and scientific innovation that could increase the agricultural production side. Having said that, we should not also underscore the importance of training farmers themselves on some of the farming practices that are always available, and ensure that these skills and the cultures of farming are transferred from one generation to the other. So we continue the agricultural training programs to the universities, and improving the agricultural curriculum to meet the needs of that will transform the agricultural revolution in the next 10 to 15 years. Thank you.
This is a question placed to the DG of Health. I noticed in your statement that you're complaining the media is being too negative about the state of public health care. I'm wondering if you could expand on that. I'm curious about it, because to me it seems that that is precisely the job of the media, to highlight concerns and blow the whistle about the problems in society.
That's a very interesting way in which the media works, because its job is simply to highlight the problems of society. I thought the media was doing more than that. It was also trying to reflect to society how society should look at itself, not only in negative terms, but in also positive terms. So if, for example, you have a basis that tells society generally that the only thing that's good about a public health system is that it is bad, I think there is a problem in that kind of approach. We need to be able to say, we went to this situation and we're back now, 5 weeks later, we can report that through our intervention, even the intervention of the media should be reported on, that we intervened and we are able to see changes because we actually exposed A, B, and C. So the problem is, we're talking also about issues of follow-up here, where once you've got some kind of a change in that situation, that the media is no longer interested in order to be able to say, look, we exposed this and this is what the outcome is, and so we can now confirm to the public that there have been changes. And we can go to a whole range of instances around that issue.
Okay.
idealized built. This is a question directed at Mr. Gindel. Could you provide us more information about the Future Laptop Initiative? Has it been launched? How far is it? What are the simple, cost-effective mechanisms for educators to get laptops? And will it really help?
Thank you for the question, and indeed, yes, I'm sure it will help if we can provide every teacher in the country with a laptop, and that's certainly our intention. This, in fact, is part of the broader OSD occupation-specific dispensation that was agreed on with the unions last year. There are funds within that that are broadly designated for development purposes, and the Teacher Laptop Initiative is indeed part of that. You might have seen the advertisement in the papers over the last week or two requesting what we call expressions of interest. We've now invited firms, companies in this particular area to tell us, obviously, about the products and services that they have available to them. But we've also invited, and we do see this as a public-private partnership, we've invited these companies also to tell us not where the funding can come from, because we have the funding already, but more importantly, the funding models we can use to ensure that we do get a laptop into the hands of every teacher at an affordable price in the next short term. So I think that's probably as much as we're going to say. We will be talking to the unions, obviously, about the final detail about this, but we are in the final stages now of wrapping up the proposal around the laptop initiative, and we will use, obviously, the information we get from that effort. Mr. Patel is here, so if any of the journalists certainly in Pretoria want to follow on with that, I would really invite them to engage with him more directly.
So we come to Pretoria. Two hands. Thank you. Kalani Banjo from the Independent Newspaper. I'd like to ask a question to the department, the Social Development Department, regarding the South African Social Security Agency. There's been reports that there is a massive a high rate of vacancy within the department, a crippling rate of vacancy. And I was just wanted to know what problems this presents for the social welfare department or social development, and what are you doing to actually make sure that you have the vacancies? And why aren't there any vacancies? For instance, there were over 10,000 vacancies, but only 723 posts filled called into latest report. So I just wanted an explanation of that.
Thanks. Your question specifically around SASA, the South African Social Security Agency. It's important to note that SASA was established 2 years ago legally, and it brought together nine provincial departments, staff of nine provincial departments, plus people from the national department. So you had an institution that didn't exist to an institution with adapted 6,000 staff members. The planned staff component for SASA over the next few years is actually 16,000. At the moment, they're sitting at 7,000. So there's a massive institutional building program that's emerging there. The agreed establishment, staff establishment, as signed up by the minister, is just under 8,000. So in terms of what is in place and what the vacancy rate is, it's not that significant. Obviously, there are plans to ensure that critical staff, and what we mean by critical staff is staff that actually improve the administration of social assistance, is full as opposed to executive level staff. That's the decision that we've made in terms of the staff numbers. So does that cover your question?
You're saying that, sorry about that, you're saying that it's not critical staff that is in administration. But can you explain that, looking at the work that staff have done, what problems are there? I mean, one of the issues is the investigations of those corrupt members of Home Affairs, in terms of trying to rig the Department of the Craft that is there. And these staff members, this vacancy is supposed to have staff members who actually investigate that. I don't
of their own prayers, corrupt the very little that we can do. We suffer, and there's obviously dependency between all of us and what Sasa does. As you would remember from the briefing where last week around the Special Investigation Unit, what we pointed out there was the success of the embedded nature of the Special Investigation Unit within Sasa, and the fact that they've actually not only stopped corruption that took place in the past and investigated it, but there's also a preventative measure within that, that people, that the loopholes are being stopped. At the same time, we need to move towards building the capacity of SASA to take over some of the ongoing operational work of the SIU so that the SIU can only come in on the forensic side. And I'm sure that is the kind of vacant issue that you're speaking about there. Because it's something that we've newly identified in partnership with the SIU, so that's a whole new section of work for SASA to be engaging in. Just to correct what I interpreted, what I said, actually the critical staff is actually the staff in operations. Those are the people that ensure that application management is improved, payment management is improved, and the service that people experience, particularly at local office level, will be interfaced with the people that access SASA services, that their experience is improved. Okay, would you?
I'd like to ask two questions. One for the Department of Labor. I'd like to find out
we don't have labor.
Okay. There is something here that says there's been a suggestion that a wage subsidy be given to low wage workers, particularly the youth. I want to find out how far that is, how far we've gone in terms of that, if the Department of Education is the first one. And the second one was the Department of Agriculture. I wanted to find out, I understand that 95% of restitution claims have now been settled, but I wanted to find out, you talk about hectares and percentages, but in terms of post-settlement support for those beneficiaries, I'd like to find out what it is that you're doing, because it seems that there are indications that a lot of projects that have been started on those restituted farms are actually not going well. What are you going to do to make sure that you turn this around?
Sorry, the last question for the panel of the office.
Yeah. No, on the first question, one of the programs, if you look at our POE, one of the things we say is that this year we are doing a review of the comprehensive social security, particularly in relation to issues of pensions and related matters, and then the introduction of a wage subsidy. Now, we have done a lot of technical work with regard to that between the National Treasury and the Department of Labor and the Department of Social Development. And all that technical work has been reported on at least in the last July, in other words, looking at models from various other countries, how to introduce such a subsidy and so on. We haven't taken final decisions on which way to go, how that subsidy would work. But we've actually gathered all the information necessary for the minister. There's an interministerial committee that is led by the Minister of Finance that is actually looking at that. So we'll be meeting very soon to review the work that has been done by the technical committee, consisting of these various departments, looking at the reform of pension, as well as the introduction of the wage subsidy. So we're at the point where at least models have been developed, but whether we're going to decide how to actually do that and what model to take is going to depend on the strategic discussion at the political level, at the interministerial committee level. What is the mechanism which is used all over the world to ensure that new employees or the employers are encouraged to take new entrants, by ensuring that their cost of labor is subsidized through a wage subsidy, so that then there is an incentive for the employers to employ particularly young people. Because the challenge we have here, particularly for those young people, is that they are asked, do you have experience? If you don't, then you're not going to be employed. Yet they need that experience from getting employed. And so in order to
to incentivize employers to actually focus on those young people. We need some form of wage subsidy on that. The mechanisms are what we're working for.
Interesting. A few minutes ago, we were discussing the issue of with the land, you can separate land from the Department of Land Affairs from agriculture, but you can't separate agriculture from land affairs because agriculture happens on the land. The issue about post-settlement support, we do have a bill, the Provision of Land Assistance Amendment Bill, which is in Parliament. We'll be debating it on the 22nd of September next week in Parliament. The intention of that bill is to ensure that even at the point of land acquisition, there is assistance with, for example, movable assets such as agricultural equipment and things that are going to support the new landowners immediately on land transfer. On the second, at the second level, we do have an interaction with the Department of Agriculture. They have taken the list of all farms that we have acquired to put them on their GIS to locate them, to say what is it that they can do to ensure that, as we discussed the area-based planning approach, what is it that they can do to support those projects through their programs. That assistance is driven by the national office, but with the provincial Department of Agriculture, that information is going to assist in their planning on how to provide this support to the land reform beneficiaries. On the review of CAF, Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, the Department of Agriculture is working on the effectiveness of those programs. In the reflection that they made, they realized that they were selecting some of the elements of the CAF program in their support at the level of provinces. But now what in the review they are saying, they want to provide all the support pillars of CAF to the land reform beneficiaries. So the answer is that with the review of the Comprehensive Agricultural Support Program, there will be a more comprehensive support to the land reform beneficiaries. I must say that from the Department of Land Affairs, we are interacting with what we call the strategic partners, those people who have got experience in agriculture. We call this public-private partnerships, which is a strategy of government to ensure that those who are more skilled and who have experience in this field can work together with those who are the newcomers in this field. So we are saying that this is going to assist to ensure a better performance in agriculture.
Thanks, Fiji. Any follow-up tutorial? Cape Town? Well, also announced that we've got the CEO of Karikute, multi-literacy campaign, Professor Mukai, who's also with us here. In case there are any other questions with regard to that campaign and how far it's going.
I know that the Falta wants to ask
a question.
My name is Clive Noble from SA State Association. My question is directed at the Department of Social Development. Can you give us an idea as to how many of those employees who crossed over from the department to SASA were, by the time when SASA was launched, either under investigation or implicated in social grant fraud?
And I think the total number of public sector employees that were under investigation was about 40,000. We can circulate the exact details of the SIU investigation that we did for the circulated last week. Of those, all of them have been investigated. I think there's about 15,000 of those. I'm not sure if the figures left to verify got into a situation where they had to repay the debt.
And in fact, the default rate is very, very low, as has been reported by the department, by the FIU. Remember, there was a transfer of 6,000 staff nationally from the department to SAFRA. And 40,000 that we're speaking about is not just the Department of Social Development, it's across the public sector.
It's last question.
The respondent misunderstood my question. I was saying how many out of these 40,000 were still allowed to cross over to SAFRA from the department?
The SIU in its investigations only commenced with the establishment of SAFRA in 2006. So by the time the investigation commenced, all of those staff had already crossed over to SAFRA. So the vetting processes in essence began after the establishment of SAFRA.
Shall we take it also one of the last questions? Any follow-up, Cape Town?
Not in Cape Town.
Victoria, shall we thank all the judges for coming?
Errol, yes.
Sorry, an afterthought here from Cape Town. I don't see any representatives from the Department of Sport there.
Three times a day.
A big pardon? The Department of Sport, I don't see any representatives there, but can somebody there tell us what is the employment status of the Director General of the Department of Sport, please?
I think that one you have to take it to the department. Unfortunately, these are the counterparts and they don't employ anybody at their level. But we have the last question as well from Victoria.
But I wanted to find out from the Department of Health, there's been this ongoing plan to bring about the reduction in the cost of medicines at retail outlets. I wanted to find out how far that has gone, because I do understand that there was some kind of court challenge in terms of that. How far has that gone?
To remind you, there are two processes, final, at least let me say, the latest processes relating to the reduction of the cost of medicine. The first one related to the matter of the pharmacist and what we call the logistic fee, where we say we want to be sure that you as a consumer know what you're paying for the medicine itself and what you're paying for the administration of that medicine by the pharmacist, so that you can decide, you know, whether you want to use the pharmacist or you want to use other methods. At the moment, you do not have that distinction. And if you do, it's still based on a calculation that is actually, that was challenged before. Then we came with another calculation, and that was actually challenged in court. I think the court case is coming in beginning of October. I think it's about the 3rd of October, if I'm not mistaken. That is with the pharmacist. And in between, we have been interacting with the group to actually look at whether we can settle the issue before we reach court. But it's clear that it's not possible to settle it unless we have a pronouncement by a court of law at the moment. So that matter is in the hands of the court. Now, it has prevented a further review, because it's almost a year now, because this thing has to be reviewed every year. So since it's up to the case, it has prevented a further review by ourselves on the matter. On the other hand, we have actually issued for comment, another mechanism, the methodology that we want to use for what we call benchmarking of medicine. In other words, we benchmark the prices of the medicines in this country with a certain basket of countries. Because in some instances, you'll find that people will say to you that it's cheaper to buy the same medicine in Australia or in the UK, but it's expensive here. So we're introducing a method called the international benchmarking method, so that we can be able to then
look at where our medicine should be vis-à-vis some basket of countries that are relatively selected. Now that process is still in the process of comment by the public. I think we're about to close that comment, because that's still the process of the Tricent Committee. So Tricent Committee has issued the methodology, people are commenting on it. We believe that issue is also going to bring the medicine further down, because some of those medicines are highly priced compared to other countries that actually are of the same kind of market, etc., etc. But it's also a contested issue, so even there, we may not be surprised if there are challenges, but we believe there wouldn't be yet, because we are talking to the industry very closely at the moment. So that's where we are with those two issues.
Thank you very much, Gigi. Shall we also thank all the DTs for coming and all the members of the media. We have provided contact numbers for all of those segments in case you still want to explore some of those issues. And also, I think I can send you and commit the DTs that if there is any issues that you want to explore further, for interviews and so on, we can make sure that we arrange it. They will be available to make sure that we deal with those issues. Thank you very much to the media. And that's the end.
Thank you.